What?
The old rally on Friday, follow through on Monday. That's what we got going today, folks. But you know what the good news is? It's not the mega caps. It's just a lot of the small caps. Broadening rally here. A few earnings reports, a big upgrade, moving Micron. Have you ever been to a Berkshire Hathaway meeting? Well, if you haven't, we're going to talk to somebody who was there over the weekend. Todd Gordon at 8:35, special guest at 8:55. It's Monday on Pre-Market Prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, as I said, trading smartly in the green here, 17 and three quarters handles, 5172.50, new rebound high, buck flat, just under 105, TLT over 90, up 32 cents at 90.16, crude up 88 cents at 78.99, gold rallying on rate cut hopes up 1880 at 23.2730, silver, that's the big winner, up 67 cents at 27.36. Bitcoin putting together a couple good back-to-back days, up $2,180 on this Monday morning. Triple D, we got some movers. We got some movers over the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. Yeah. We got some small caps perking up. I know you got a lot of positions today, so we're going to ramble through. But Warren tripped his apple. Shocker.
And it's not a shocker. I actually thought of this like Friday night, and I'm like, he sold some last quarter, and he did. We knew that he sold some last quarter, and I had it in my head. I'm like, you know what? You said it perfectly in the pre-market show. When he starts selling, usually he's not one and done. And I'm like, I bet he sold more. So I shorted it Friday night into the Berkshire Hathaway intentionally, just because I thought Warren may have sold more, and indeed he did. Sold 13% of his position. The reason we don't get the regular two-day filings is because it's under 10%. He's under 10% ownership. He doesn't own 10% of the company. So he doesn't have to file until we get actually the 13D filings on the 45 days later. So we'll see those again. We'll see that. But he said it, you know, that he had sold, and, you know, he was talking about his positioning, so from the meeting. So it actually pulled back significantly last night. It was down in the low 180s. I was able to get covered in the low 180s. Wow. So I'm already out of the position. I made the entire range pretty much.
They just threw those prints up there. Did you see?
No, those are the prints probably from me. But no, if you look over, the low was in the low 180s. I covered 180 and a half, I think I averaged out. So wow. I just felt like it was down $3. I'm like, that's pretty much fully valued. The market was trading higher. I'm like, I'd probably bounce it back. And they are. You know, predictably, they come in, they buy the dip, and they absolutely did. Does that mean, you know, Apple's safe and we're investing in Apple? Warren's selling Apple. I've talked about the overvaluation. He's seeing the same thing I am. That's what he's seeing. He's seeing a company that is not growing, trading at 28 times or 26 times earnings because the price came down a little bit. Only reason going up because they're doing buybacks here. Lots going not that great here at Apple. I think it's a prudent sell by him. I think he's going to continue to sell it. I think he wants it lighter. He didn't say really why he was selling it. He didn't really want to talk about it, to be honest. You know, Becky Quick was asking. He didn't want to talk about that much. He's just saying, oh, it's a good time to raise cash. You know, he was like, you know, that's what he was talking about, is raising more cash. But he didn't want to talk his stock down and say, oh, it's overvalued, and then the thing tanks. So he didn't want to talk about it. But he's thinking the same thing I am. He doesn't sell. Warren doesn't sell stocks that he thinks are undervalued. He doesn't think Apple's undervalued anymore. He's selling because he thinks it's overvalued. That's the truth.
And he's got cash. He's finally got cash.
He didn't need more cash. He didn't need to sell to raise cash. People say, oh, diversification's grown so much. But it was like that for a long time. He's looking. You know, you're looking at Apple. They're not growing. And they're trading 26 times earnings. That's a problem, folks. I'd be taking profits into the Apple, too, overall. I have no position on it here. Maybe I'll short it again from a trading perspective here. If it comes back up, you know, I may do that. But as of right now, no intentions to come in here and buy at all. I know we can say, let's bring AB in here.
Yeah, AB, what else did Uncle Warren do over there, or announced, it wasn't, he announced it over the weekend, but he took a hit in something, right?
Yeah, so Buffett sold all his Paramount and said he lost a decent amount of money on it, P-A-R-A, the ticker there. And of course, Paramount's been in the headlines recently with a potential merger with, you know, first Skydance Media. Now you have, who else was hopping in? It was Sony came in talking about buying Paramount last week. So Berkshire, yeah, Buffett said he got completely out of Paramount, took a little bit of a hit on it. And Paramount, not really trading down this morning, up about, you know, 3%. Well, hold on, I think I'm getting some of the weird FINRA prints, but
I hate this time. And this is, again, if you're just tuning in for the first time, the FINRA trades happen at 8 a.m. And it's all the overnight sessions from Robinhood, Interactive Brokers, Thinkorswim. This is all the trades that happened last night. You're looking at history. You're not looking at current trade. So if you think, oh my gosh, Apple, I can go buy it right now at 181. Now, those are the trades from last night that when the tape was closed, that those have to hit the tape. So they do the tape dump at 8 a.m. and it's annoying. It changes your last. Certain systems need to, you know, system makers, if you're looking out there, I guess, you know, FINRA during the day, though, is trades, so it's difficult, you know, that this 8 a.m. trade dump isn't real. Well, they're real trades. They just aren't currently occurring. They're late to report.
Annoying. You have a solution? Annoying. You have a solution? I mean, I know we talk
about it. Well, you could have a system that just ignores all FINRA trades, but FINRA is almost half the market. So during the day, you see these FINRA trades, and you're not going to have any of those on the tape, and it's half the market, so you're going to miss half the trades. So it is a tricky solution here. You know, but it sucks that they just take the 8 a.m. and they just dump them all onto there. And again, you know, we had to figure this out by making calls, emails, and stuff, because FINRA regulators, there's no transparency in the FINRA tape. It just says FINRA could be anything. So they don't tell you publicly what this stuff is. But from calling around, we found out that this is the 8 a.m. trade dump from all the Robinhood overnight trades, all the Thinkorswim overnight trades, all the Interactive Brokers, and everybody else who has 24-hour trading. That's what you're seeing happen at 8 a.m. Those are the trades from the last 12 hours when we were all sleeping. Those are the trades. Now, 4 a.m. would be real trades, but anything that happened between like 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. last night, that's what you're looking at here.
All right, yeah, so we had Paramount, Apple, other takeaways. I mean, like you mentioned, Berkshire just sitting on a bunch of cash. Elon Musk came in on Twitter or X and said that that Warren Buffett should take a position in Tesla. I mean, shocker that Elon Musk would want him to do that. But Musk wasn't really selling it that hard. He just said, hey, he should take a position in Tesla. I mean, I don't know if Musk will go out of his way to try to court Buffett, but either way, it'll be interesting to see what Buffett does with the $2 billion in cash he's got, or it's about $190 billion.
So much money.
Going back to the Apple thing real quick, it wasn't shocking to see him trim that position more, because it's Buffett, it seems like the type of investor that once he makes up his mind on something and starts trimming a position, I don't think he's coming back in and buying more of that stock.
No, like he's not a day trader.
Yeah, he's made his decision once he starts cutting the position. And honestly, I mean, he might really want to sell more of it, but without kind of spooking the overall market. I mean, he knows probably if he sells, bombs out of his complete Apple position, that stock would
now
be
that
trading.
That would be a market mover. Now, if he went flat Apple, but you know, he's getting it. What, they increased the dividend again, right? And
barely. Yeah, I mean, the dividend's not huge. Yeah. But
I'm with AB. He's not done, man. He's selling more.
No, when he starts buying, oh man, how many times did he buy it? When what was that other character that we don't even talk about anymore? Icon. Remember, Icon was selling and Carl was buying. Remember that? That was like a decade ago.
I don't think he's done. I think that's a concerning. I think it's all very concerning for Apple. I know the buy the dippers have come in overnight. And they're like, who cares? Buffett's out. This company's still doing $115 billion buyback, raising the dividend. It's a cash cow. Everybody's buying iPhones still. All true, but paying 26 times for that. I don't like that. And I don't like the fact that I'm with Buffett. I've been with Buffett. I was ahead of Buffett on this. I dumped mine. I had it for like 9 years in my long-term portfolio. Stock went from $25 to $180. I think I averaged out about $176. And I'm like, you know what? Not growing. When I bought this thing, it was 13, 14 times earnings, reasonably under market multiple. They kept saying, the argument was, why does Apple trade with such a cheap multiple? Why does it trade so much under? You know, this thing, you know, is like, you know, making so much money. Why? And eventually it built up that multiple. Well, you know what? It's fully valued here, folks. It's overvalued here, folks. And until they come out with a product that moves the needle, it's overvalued. And I think eventual, it might just correct itself sideways. Maybe it just grows. Maybe it does this for like a number of years. But it's not the driver here. Until they show me a product, there's no reason for me to jump here on an Apple. And Apple's been dead money for a while already, despite the buybacks that have been happening here. If you look at the long-term performance of this stock, 2022, this is where we were. So for 2 years, we've gone nowhere in Apple.
What if he would have came out with like the Vision Pro goggles on?
Well, that would have been
Huge.
All right, last thing I'm warned. I know I say we got to move on. Did you hear what he said about AI, Dennis?
No, actually, I did not. Was it crazy? Crazy talk?
Yeah, you won't like it.
What did he say?
He said it's for scammers.
AI is for scammers?
Yeah, and the reason is that he saw a video or a recording of him asking for money, and he thought it was him, and it was all AI. And that
there is definitely a truth to that statement. You know, again, people are going to insinuate that, AI is just for scammers. Scammers are going to use AI everything, something fiercely. Yep. It's for everything. Scammers, though, will use AI. I mean, the scams are out of control. My email's, you know, full of spam. My phone rings half the time. And, you know, it's a collections agency or it's the government taking away my social insurance number. Or, you know, my dog's lost down the street. I don't have a dog, you know, or my banking account's been stolen at CIBC. I don't have an account at CIBC. It's ridiculous. The spam is out of control. And Warren is absolutely correct. It's only going to get worse with AI because the deep fakes are going to happen. You know, we see, you know, they do the Biden deep fakes. They do, you know, this deep fake. You know, they did the Cooper. Did anybody watch the Cooper deep fake from we'll talk hockey for a second here. Tampa Bay Lightning. They had them dropping like F-bombs on the thing and saying the league's rigged. It was all fake. You know, so after the Tampa Bay Lightning got coach Tampa Bay Lightning, John Cooper, after they got eliminated, he had said something about, you know, like, which was somewhat offside. He said about, you know, the goalie should have purses, which, you know, that was like a pretty bold statement that probably ticked a lot of people off. But then somebody did a deep fake and it was just over the top and it looked pretty real. I mean, you could tell it's glitchy and stuff, but that's only going to get better. You know, video evidence and cases is going to be useless in 10 years because they just make that up. So it's like, oh, I got him on camera stealing from me. Wow, you made that up. So, I mean, that's the downside of AI. Yeah, and Warren's correct. There's going to be some downside. There's never upside to everything.
All right, let's go ahead and bring it to earnings. Not the huge companies we had that reported last week, but we did have Tyson Foods report this morning. Tyson trading higher on that report. I'm waiting for the numbers to load up in my pro real quick. Give me 1 second. And then we had some sympathy movers as well with Tyson. So Tyson reported 62-cent EPS, beat by 22 cents. So the market was expecting about 40 cents there. Revenue came in at $13.07 billion, missed by $90 million. So beat on the EPS, missed on revenue, but the stock is trading higher this morning by about 2%.
Oh, this is the boring part of earnings season. I tell you, we're going to have a lot of excitement, but when you got Tyson Foods is your excitement here, and it's true. There's just nothing else. We'd save Bolero, which is a Kramer pick, Crystal X, which would be an interesting one to talk about, KRY.
Which one?
Remember on the show, it's Crystal Biotech, not Crystal X.
KRTX, yeah.
KRYS. We're going to take it away from Tyson because I don't even care. Sorry. There's nothing happening on Tyson. It's up a buck. But go to KRYS, AB. Let's go to KRYS. You're going to grab the earnings in the background, but I'll tell the story. Remember the stock, Joel? And we had somebody come on this show. It was a biotech analyst back in, 5 years ago, maybe more. It was somebody from one of those funds. You got him. It was a biotech analyst.
I know who you're talking about.
And he came on this show in 2018 and said, I love this stock. And he was one that was like, he's like, this stock was $11 at the time. And he says, if I had all my money, I would put all my money in this. And he wasn't allowed to trade it because he worked for some company. So he didn't even have a position, but he's like, I absolutely love this company. When he said that, I was like, wow. You know, I went, did my research, and a couple days later, I went and bought some KRYS at $11. And, you know, and it didn't do that much for a while, but eventually it started going up. It went to 20 and 30 and 50. And I sold, you know me, I'm long gone. I think I ended up selling some at like 30 and some more at 50. And that was it. This stock is $161 on Friday. Now, again, it's pulling back 143, but that has got to be one of the best calls on this show that we have ever had. And who was that gentleman? Because, man, I made a little bit of money after he made that call. Just great due diligence. And this isn't like, you know, some guy has a pump or whatever. He couldn't even own the stock. It was an analyst. It was an actual analyst for his firm. It just done some fantastic homework.
We haven't. I lost communication with them. Was it Paul Uke?
I think that sounds, you know, I'm trying to remember. That sounds right, but holy cow. If it was you, Paul, and you're listening, I don't know if we lost communication with them. What a call.
Jay says, I was just going to say, we'll go to the Jay archives. Jay, was it?
Rice has been with us forever.
Yeah, it was Paul Uke. We haven't, you know what?
I think it was. Joel has a memory on the names. And Chad, can you verify that? I think that rings a bell.
But Let me look him up. We
never talk about this stock, and there's not much talk about here, AB. So I was like, we might as well bring this KRYS up.
Yeah.
And I don't even know. They do some drug for like a really rare disease, and they're like the only cure type deal. And he called all that. So unbelievable call. AB, talk about the earnings here and, you know, what happened here, though.
So EPS came in at a positive 3 cents, which beat the negative 5 cent estimate. Sales came in at 45.25 million, missed the 47.4 million estimate. So not really doing that much in revenue. I mean, you're looking at, you know, $45 million in revenue, but it's only it's a $4.5 billion market cap. So and then just looking at what the company does. So the company used its proprietary gene therapy platform to develop treatments for rare orphan dermatological indications caused by the absence or the mutation. So it sounds like they're doing something with like gene therapies, but yeah, like you said, doing some like rare disease. But stock getting crushed this morning, down 11%. But I mean, that's, look, 143 a share right now. Man. This guy came on and called it at 10. That is a huge gainer, like a 15 bagger there. So
yeah,
KRYS getting a little crushed this morning. But hey, I mean, if you got in when the guy pitched it, then you're sitting pretty.
I just sold too soon. I want to give, I want you to reach out, Joel. If we can verify that it was his call, we should reach out and try to get him on the show again. Because
you know what? I remember now, I remember it, at the time and for a while back, I'll check with him. He was in Hawaii. So if you're a guest in Hawaii, and you want to come on our show?
We love all the Hawaii guests now.
But that's like
He was so convicted. Do you remember that? He was so convicted on this stock. I'm like, I'm going and checking this stock out now too. It was an analyst for some firm, and I don't remember even which firm he was with, if his own private research firm or not. But he was so convicted. He talked about the rare disease, like they're tackling this. He's like, this company, I love this company. And I'm like, man, you know, you don't get an analyst coming on. They're so convicted on something like that. So anyway, sometimes, you know, when they come on that
tangent.
Yep. They're doing, sorry, that tangent time's over. But anyways, great call.
All right. Just quick preview for the week. We do have some more earnings coming. Disney later this week. We have Palantir tonight. Robinhood, Reddit is getting ready for its inaugural first report as a publicly traded company. So that should be an interesting one as well. Potentially could move other social media stocks. You got, you know, of course, we haven't touched up on DJT recently as well, but that's come back a ways from after it got crushed. And now DJT's back around $50 a share. So I'm sure we'll preview some of these stocks. But let's go to Disney first, since we were talking about Paramount earlier, kind of this, you know, whole content thing. So Disney, of course, had its big proxy battle, the investors coming in and trying to get rid of Iger and get a leadership. The leadership team won. So now it's their job to kind of report good numbers to say the company is back on track. Disney, I mean, I wanted to start building a position down here around $100. I didn't pull the trigger, and now it's up since then. And I feel like I kind of missed the boat. Would you guys want to be long this ahead of the report?
I want to be long all stocks ahead of reports. Again, do I hold it through the report? I don't know. Like, one of my core strategies is just buying stocks 3 days before they report, you know, and trading them from the long side. I should say just trading them from the long side. You know, like you're wiggling in, but, you know, you're buying dips, intraday dips or overnight dips, you know, and then you're trying to, you know, there just seems to be that positive, you know, and again, the strategy is working here this morning with Disney. It's up 1%. Market's only up 0.4%. Actually, Disney's beta is a little bit less than the market, I think. So that's actually an oversized move here. But I don't know if I want to own it into the report or not. It has had a hell of a move, AB, 90 to 120. Yeah, I mean, we started the year. This isn't a company. I think Disney's going to be fine. I think if you're buying Disney and you have a 10-year time horizon, you'll probably be happy that you bought it. Disney and you have a 3-day time horizon, I don't know on this earnings report. Expectations are higher than they were on the last report. We'll say that.
It's all about the news flow. You know, you had like the negative news flow forever, you know, about, you know, what was going on with DeSantis and what was going on in Florida. And then you get, was it Peltz, right? And he's going to come in, he's going to change the company. And it actually, I remember talking about this right around the proxy vote. It made that quad top there in the woods, 122 and change. And it hasn't been a violent retreat, but it's just been, you know, just like a steady drip. So this is kind of a, right now, I'd say there's good support at 110. I wouldn't want to have, you know, 109.5, 110 area has been a big area. But you still, you know, you got that underneath gap to fill for a while. So kind of in no man's land, but developing pretty good support there, 110. And it's just kind of out of the news now. Now it's going to have its earnings and they're going to talk, oh, how long is Zarya going to stick around or yada, yada, yada. But you quickly touched about the Palantir. That's trading up ahead of its report. Our buddy over at Wedbush, Dan Ives, he's getting bullish on this one. So getting a little pop here up 95 cents before the report after the close.
Yeah, I've been playing this before the report too. Was long it overnight, sold it already here. Probably will try to buy dips again on it. You know, again, it reports tonight though, but you know, maybe if you get a chance to get in ahead of the report again. These retail-driven stocks, it really works well on them too. Again, Ives, you know, pumping it here, so it's helping a little bit further this morning. But I bought a 23.33 at the close on Friday just to have it overnight because I figured, you know, they were, you know, like this stock over the weekend, they'd be talking about it because earnings are coming up. I mean, that's just predictable trading. And again, it works. It's up 4%.
And good market too. Good market on good. Friday.
Yeah, market environment for that strategy is everything, Joel. If you're in a bear market, that strategy doesn't work. If you're in a bull market, there's almost no strategy that works better. So you got to know your market environment. Like that's what I always say, teaching moment for 2 minutes, you know. Core strategies, have your toolbox of strategies for different types of markets. And the reason, you know, I'm a successful trader and I've been successful for 25 years now professionally trading in my living is that I have a lot of different strategies for a lot of different markets. When you're in a bear market, you know, you're just like you're doing statistical arbitrage, a lot of that, because prices just get all out of whack because people are selling and they're scared and just get me out of stocks. I mean, those are some of my best years. And then when you're in a bull market, it's like beta. It's like storied stocks. It's like owning stocks ahead of reports, which we just said. You know, it's like all that stuff you're doing. So you got to do different stuff in different markets environments. Right now, today, market's trading higher. The bulls are back in control to a certain extent. Yeah. You know, we never did hit a bear market. We never got the 20% correction. We never even got into corrective territory on the SPY. Certain stocks, though, have been, you know, corrective too. So, I mean, different strategies for different market environments. Nothing works all the time, unless you're Kenny G and you're just doing market making, and that works all the time.
So we were talking about Paramount. We talked about Disney briefly, another company in the content space. I saw someone in the chat talking about it, wanted not really huge news, but Netflix. Did you guys see what Netflix did last night, Joel? This is up your alley.
Well, I got a spam that they canceled a subscription that I never have, but
this world, man, the spam in this world.
No, what did they do?
Just impressive.
So Netflix had a live roast of Tom Brady last night with a bunch of different, you know, like celebrities and former players. They had Drew Bledsoe there, Belichick talking, all this stuff. And I was like, you know, some of my friends were talking about it, and I wasn't even gonna watch it, but then I didn't realize where it was being streamed, this roast. And then I logged on to Netflix to watch something else, and I saw it right on the homepage. I was like, okay, I'll tune into this for a little bit. And I thought it was funny because it's like, out of anyone in the world to roast, I mean, what can you really say about Tom Brady? Like, he's too good looking, he's too rich, he won too many Super Bowls. But there was a lot of, you know, Giselle jokes, a lot of, you know, crypto jokes about him because they were kind of reaching, right? I mean, you had to like, oh, you lost, you know, a few million dollars in crypto. And that was kind of like the big thing people were roasting on him for, and or playing too long or this or that. But it was my first time watching anything live on Netflix. And it was actually pretty good. I mean, it was like, you know, the stream worked well. It was entertaining. So obviously, this has been one of Netflix's thing they're trying to get into, more live content, and definitely like sports content, which is obvious. It wasn't sports, but it was sports related. So, again, not the biggest news on Netflix, but I thought it was interesting.
Was Dean Martin the host? Yeah.
Sorry.
Dean Martin the host?
No, they had what's his name, Ross, whatever the big like roast guy. He was there. Kevin Hart was like the main host, and yeah, they had some big names there.
You guys don't get that. Let's see, probably no. Jay's the only one in the chat that gets that. Dean Martin used to do a celebrity roast show, and like pretty frequently, and he was really Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. No, not ringing a bell. Ding ding.
I know Jerry Lewis, but.
Dean Martin?
The singer.
Okay.
No, I don't know he did a roast. I know who Dean Martin is. I didn't know he did a roast, though.
Okay. All right. That tangent is attributed to AP.
Yep.
Okay.
We went on a little tangent.
Get us back on the road.
Yeah, right. I don't remember what we were talking about.
We're not a full self-driving show.
We were not yet. AI is going to put us out of business, though, Joel, for sure. When AI comes in, there'll be Dennis Dick AI here just like killing it, man. The rants that Dennis Dick AI will have will make Dennis Dick's this human here look like nothing. Okay, where were we? He doesn't even know where we were.
No, we don't know where we were. Let's go to China.
We don't know what stocks we're talking about.
Let's go to China stocks real quick because we mentioned him on Friday, but China stocks continuing to get a bounce this morning. Or wait, let me
small
bounce this morning. Well, K-Web is up barely, but Baba is now back above $80. That's been the main one I'm watching because, you know, Baba less than 2 weeks ago was trading below $70. Now is up almost 20% from those lows. This comes just as like it looks like the economic situation in China is slowly improving, maybe some less geopolitical fears, as well as you know, you had Yellen going over there. You had basically the U.S. and China looking like they're trying to make nice, make some better policies for business. And I mean, I think Baba here, we've talked about Dennis, like we've talked about before, just how much opportunity is here because it's so undervalued. The share price is on Baba. And you're basically just taking a bet that, okay, like you don't think there's going to be any big fallout between U.S. and China relations. You don't think China is going to go invade Taiwan. And if those things stay true, then there's no reason Baba shouldn't be trading at least $150 a share, if not higher.
Well, you've outlined it perfectly. It's the political risk. We've talked about the geopolitical risk here before. That's the reason that I don't have half my money in China stocks because it's the best value out there. There's for real. The China stocks are ridiculously undervalued, but the geopolitical risk is real. Hard to quantify that. The only stock I have directly, obviously through ETFs and stuff, you get some China exposure, but the direct ownership, the only one I have is Baidu. I think Baidu is an AI play. I think it continues to be an AI play. I love Baidu. I know Citron's been talking Baidu. They like it too. I think Andrew does some good research. I think Baidu actually is my way I'm playing China. I'd buy pullbacks on these though. I do think the China low is in. I think unless we get something crazy happen, these stocks are just so cheap. So pick your poison or pick your non-poison.
How did we miss
Pinduoduo, Baidu, Baba, JD? They've all been murdered. They're coming back a little bit here lately. Not chasing, but I'd buy dips.
How did we miss this? You have a holiday called National Day Golden Week.
Oh.
It starts the week, a week-long public holiday where they just celebrate everything with a variety. I'm showing it here. So what What else can the Chinese market do during Golden Week?
They got to go up. Gold.
They got to go up. Exactly.
Go up.
Baba trading range, long time. I brought the monthly up here because that just gives you a little bit more perspective. But if you can maybe, you are trading above 80 right now. Maybe establish a bid at 80. You know, make it look like all these lows. Where did we have? This is probably like the $70 area. Show that the big boys are willing to step up at a higher level. Because how many times have we seen these pops and these drops? That was actually, the $70 area. How many monthly lows did you have there? You had 2-3 in that area in a row. Then the buyer stepped up to 75. Let's see if you can make it an 80 bid here, or if this is just a little fluff off the holiday. The FXI has been moving nicely. Just remember, great the time. Holiday is over now. So catch up trade, like the small caps, what we haven't really got talked to about yet. But China playing some catch up.
I mean, there's catch up trade happening in a number of things. And again, it's investors, buyer exhaustion, maybe on some of the mega caps. I mean, you can only have so much Apple, Buffett. It's a little bit of buyer exhaustion here, too. They've just been money. Everybody's been in these things. They've been just the printing presses for the last decade here. The rally is broadening out. That's good news. There's a lot of people who think, sell in May and go away. Well, we're only May 6th here. So if you're going with that theme, Buffett obviously is. He's raising more cash. You got to be skeptical here. But broadening out is not a bad sign here. Now, again, if we rally today and then we just collapse and then that's a different story here too. But I would say so far so good today. I like seeing the market broaden out. I like seeing that it's not just Apple, and other companies. Obviously, Apple hasn't participated, but some of these other ones, just driving the bus here. So broadening out is a good thing.
Yeah, and speaking to that, Dennis, I mean, we did have Treasury yields dipping slightly this morning as after last week's jobs report. The odds now for a rate cut, I mean, if you go out to September 18th on the CME watch tool, more than a 50% chance, more than a 60% chance, actually, that we are going to see at least one rate cut by September or by that September 18th meeting. And now, I mean, this morning, the IWM is actually trading higher than, the S&P 500. So, will it be like a short-term thing that small caps have a better day than the S&P? Sure, maybe. But either way, to your point, we are seeing some of that broadening into small cap stocks. Some of your beaten down names like clean energy stocks are trading higher this morning. So could be something to watch as, again, those treasury yields dip today. And we'll see if again, I mean, it seems like every time now we've gotten closer to saying, OK, we're going to get rate cuts. Then that gets, rug pulled from us. Now we're not talking about rate cuts anymore. So but for right now, rate cuts are back on the table. We'll see how long that lasts.
We got some Robinhood news here. We are just took our chat, our alerted chat here. Wow.
Holy cow. I actually just got out of my Robinhood like an hour ago. So I had it overnight because it reports on Wednesday.
Later in the week.
But I actually was up like 50 cents today. So I actually got a
Wells notice from the staff of the SEC.
You don't like Wells notices?
No.
Yeah,
no.
And they don't give us details often on these Wells notices here. So, all we know is SEC looking at something here. So that's an issue. So that's obviously what just happened here in Robinhood. And that's a big rug pull. The stock was up because Bitcoin was up. It trades with Bitcoin sometimes. Bitcoin's up substantially here. Well, was up pretty good this morning. And then you have it reporting. It was trading up a lot. It was like 1860. So it was trading up a lot here. They just pulled the rug. Wow. Big rug pull.
Let's see. We do have, I see the form in Benzinga Pro, but I don't have time to really go through I don't think it's really saying much anyway. Let's see. We do have our guest hanging out backstage. We've got Todd Gordon. I think without further ado, let's go ahead and bring Todd on the show. See what Todd's been watching.
All right. Todd Gordon, founder Inside Edge Capital and TradingAnalysis.com. Todd, how you doing here on this Monday morning?
Good. Good morning, guys. How are you?
All right, let's just go broad market here. There's a guy talking about, you know, better breadth in the market. That's finally what we're getting here. Tell us what's been on your radar as of late.
Yeah, wow. You're right, the business show. I thought we were going to hit the Derby first, but...
Still waiting for
my host
to finish.
We haven't talked to Derby. Todd's right. Don't go back. Go to the Derby, Todd. You make some money in the Derby.
No. Hey, listen, your show. I'm happy to be on.
You got the horse guy, Joel. Todd's in the horse here too. And we didn't even mention the Derby. It was a photo finish, Joel. You must have been.
It was a big race. It was crazy. A big upset.
Yep. 18-1 comes in by a tooth.
Wow.
It was a wild race. When they came to the top of the stretch there, unfortunately, my horse got out of the gate when he went to the wrong way towards the rail. But there were at one point, there was like 7-8 horses across the track, and then there was a multiple photo finish. So, that was a fun race for
our hometown boy, Chad Brown. We were all pulling for Sierra Leone, and wow.
Almost got it. Almost got it there, boy. Oh boy! But record amount of money bet on that race. Churchill Downs. If you wanted that stock,
well, how much money bet on that race?
I think I saw $211 million.
Wow!
Decent. And Churchill Downs. I mean, look at that stock. You talk about a catalyst going into an event. Look at that move that you just had. I don't know if you got the charts.
Yeah, wow.
But
I took my off. I'm holding DraftKings. I just put him back in the portfolio. But Churchill Downs above 135 looks better. I was kind of took him off my radar for a while.
Let's talk DraftKings real quick, because DraftKings reported last week. The numbers were decent. The reaction to the report wasn't great. And then Todd, why do you hold this one compared to other stocks in the space?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the revenue growth. You just look at, you know, I think they've performed well after the, sort of the shakeup with Penn and Barstools and the, you know, the ESPN bet. I think they've held in quite well. Technically, I like it above 40. You know, it just continues to grab market share, showing good rotation within the space. I don't know. It's a pretty tight trade for me. Anything below like 39.5, I'll probably cut this guy. But for now, decent response after earnings up a couple percent. It could have been better, but I'm still constructive.
Yeah, and I talked about this last week. I think just kind of being best of breed in the space. I actually was like playing around with different apps and stuff, and like, the ESPN bet app from Penn, the MGM app, like they're not on par at all with, right, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel. I mean, DraftKings and FanDuel are kind of hand in hand as like actually, you know, good apps, like good UI, easy to use, good odds. The other apps, like, to have that much separation just in the product of what's available to customers, I want to do like a long DraftKings, long FanDuel trade, short all the other ones, because there's no way the other ones aren't just bleeding market share to these two companies right now.
I gotcha. Yeah. I mean, you're looking, yeah, they came in at one point, the revenues, big beat, sort of missed on EPS, right? That was the drag. They beat revs by one. So they were looking for 1.12, came in at 1.17, still in a loss at 30 cents. But, you know, infrastructure build out, maybe to your point, costs high as you're investing in the business, and hopefully they can move towards profitability.
All right. Outside of the gaming, gambling space, what other sectors are you investing in right now?
Well, I got a few things going on. You guys mentioned breadth earlier. Uh-huh. You know, one of the biggest things that, you know, I'm seeing and I'm struggling with is, you know, with the persistent high inflation readings, you know, we had some interesting employment cost, that report, like last Tuesday, employment cost index, that threw us all off. And then we had Friday's non-farm payroll. So it's like we just have these persistent inflationary readings for the most part, keeping rates high, which really I think is the biggest driver of rotation. And we're seeing a pretty consistent move into value. And I'm just trying to figure out if, you know, we're going to run 5.25 interest rates, real yields at 2.5, you know, is that going to dislodge this, you know, this huge move into generative AI? And, you know, are if interest rates are here to stay, you know, does that disrupt? And I have to say no, but the market's trading like value trade is in favor, and that's broadening it out for sure. you know, just looking at some of the technical models we do, like technology, if you break it down into the industry groups within tech, like software, you know, application software, system software, hardware and tech, semiconductors, like all of the industries now, including semiconductors, have rotated out using relative rotation. So as much as I like NVIDIA and the way it looks technically, we're getting a real rotation into value. And that's kind of what keeps me up at night. You know, I am buying some specific stocks, a couple names. I just added Dell, good valuation, computer competition, SMCI. I put Celsius back on. Joel knows I like that one. Earnings tomorrow.
Nice.
You know, looking at those Monster, I was spending a little time this morning on the Monster earnings. They were solid and wondering, you know, how that might impact Celsius. Shake Shack, you know, I have that one on. I like that position. I heard you guys talking about crypto earlier, Coinbase. I was actually short going into that report. I thought, you know, they would need a pretty spectacular number. And I lost money on the coin short. It was an option trade. But, you know, it's interesting with the Robinhood news. I don't know what the news is, but
Wells notice.
Okay.
Yeah. More color if you want on that, like on the Robinhood. I just closed that browser. I had the thing open there, but looking into some of the crypto stuff. So, you know, we don't know obviously what they're going to dig up here, but they're obviously looking into some stuff here. So,
yeah. And I mean, my premise was like, okay, I think the market knows there was a big run in Bitcoin. I don't like the model, you know, of the crypto brokerage firm. I'm coming from the old FX platform days, some shady stuff going on back then. You know, so it's just they came in at $4 a share looking for a buck and a half or whatever, and the stock still couldn't rally. So, you know, I still think I wouldn't own it. You expect to see the stock a lot higher than what it was. So, you know, so I'm a little, you know, a little confused in here. I'm not exactly sure how to proceed. I'm watching a lot of macro stuff, a lot of rotations.
I know why you're confused, Todd, because you get an employment cost index a week and a half ago or two weeks ago, and like the whole world is on fire. Meta had bad earnings that day. And all we're never going to be able to whoop inflation, right?
Right.
And the market tanks, and then unemployment goes up a smidgen on Friday, and we had some other catalysts last week. So, I mean, there's really I know you like to focus on the fundamentals and the inflation picture and interest rates. I mean, we've talked about this for a while. They're just kind of stuck, right? So if your investment thesis is wow, rates are going lower. Well, you're not really there, and you're not really thinking that rates are going higher. I think it's been this mixed economic data, and maybe we'll just have to wait for that next CPI and PPI, because this market is like schizophrenic. Like, we're never going to get to 2%. No, we went 3.8, 3.9. We're okay. We're okay on that. That's just the way the market's reacting.
Can I share screen? Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I even put together some charts for you guys here.
Wow.
Share screen. Let's go. Window.
Yep.
Number. Hold on. Canva. Share. Can you guys see that okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just looking at, coming from the St. Louis Fed, 10-year expected inflation, right, in blue. Just sort of backing off here, overlaid on 10-year on 10-year yields, right? The yields, and this is across multiple maturities, the nominal yields are exceeding where expected inflation is coming in. I think I have it on 10s. I think I have it on 2s. So the nominal 2-year yield up here, rolling it now 5.25, and you look at where expected inflation is 2 years out, we're still at 2.5%. You know, in that core PCE coming in, I guess it was 2.7, 2.8 year over year. Like, we're getting really close to where the Fed is. It's just we're in such a such a challenging time with the election coming up, and the Fed is trying to reassert their autonomy. Could you imagine them really going into 2-3 rate cuts into this presidential election cycle? I just think the optics of it aren't there. And, you know, we're watching the September, November probabilities go back and forth. They're gonna keep doing what they've done all year, which is just push them out, push them out, push them out. I don't think we cut rates at all this year. And then the question is, can the market withstand it? And I think the way it's acting, the way earnings are coming out, you know, all that conflicting data aside, Joel, like if earnings continue to come out as strong as they have, I mean, what are we at 256, 258 EPS for the year in the S&P? We were talking $200 a share last year. Now we're at almost 258, right? Like if it continues to go, like how do we not resume higher?
I mean, it's always a bad bet long-term to bet against the market. So, I mean, short-term bets, you can find little pockets where bears win, but long-term, it's hard to bet against the markets. And I don't think AI is going to be this, you know, like some people say, well, this could actually be the job killer. You know, this could, you know, take away jobs and kill the economy and do that. Probably makes stuff more efficient. So, you know, like it already is. Like think about ChatGPT, you know, like the efficiencies of the market, the efficiency for the companies, you know, like are going to just continue to increase here. It's hard to find and say, okay, yeah, this is the turning point. Now we're going to go into this 5-year bear market or back to 2007 or 2008 financial crisis. I don't see that anything to take us there right now.
Right, right. But I mean, you know, as well as anyone, you guys all know this, you don't get hit by the train you see coming.
No.
We don't know what's going to pop up, but I say the resilience that the market has showed is great. And, you know, I was just looking at this. I can't help but get so macro. Like I'm sick of being so macro. The last 2 years, our investors, the wealth management, our research clients are like, all we talk about is macro. I mean, we're even breaking down, you know, the FX pairs, like the blanket dollar strength that I was talking about. It's more nuanced. It's not against the higher beta offensive currencies. It's more against the defensive currencies like yen. You know, you look at, and I was just popping up the 10-2 spread. You know, they're still running 30 or so basis points of 10-2 spread inversion. But again, if you look at real interest rates, where your nominal is factored into inflation, the spread is almost flat. You know, just, you know, we actually need on the 10-year yield, if the 10-year yield can just catch up to where the 2 is, that would give us a flat nominal curve. I think the real curve would go positive. On the surface, I think algo headline readers, you know, if you have 10-year yield pushing up, you know, to 4.8, 4.95, it's going to short-term sell the market. But the thesis that we've been working off is like once cooler heads prevail and they say, okay, 5-year nominal yields running real rates of 2.5%, companies can still invest and borrow at that. And it doesn't sink the market. I think everyone picks their head up and says, okay, wow, maybe it's not such a bad thing if we could just get those 10 years. I'm so sick of the 10-year yield at the 4.7 resistance level. Like, it's almost like, let's just get it up to 5 and see if it doesn't crush the market.
And you know what's going to happen? You have CNBC when it gets up to 5. You know, it's the headlines, the media driven. I mean, how much of this is actually gets media driven that they just grab onto those headlines, you know, and they want the traffic there and they got to like, and then everybody's like, oh my gosh, this sounds really bad. I better sell stocks. I mean, sometimes, you know, we're our own, you know, enemy here.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could, and I'm still employed by CNBC, the traditional media. You could blame the
social
media.
We do it too. Benzinga is the same thing. We do it. Well,
everyone's going to be flipping out about that 5%. And again, I think that'd just be a better tell for the market. If we could just print 5, it's going to suck in the near term. But if we could just kind of hold some support, and I can't help but think, you know, I'm looking at the S&P. I can, you know, if you want to see some technicals, like I'm looking at this little bit of a B wave resistance up, you know, I'm concerned that this is going to be
that.
Can you
show us that, what you're looking at? You said B wave resistance, because you know you obviously jump into the technicals way more than I love learning from you, Todd. So yeah, show this what you're seeing here.
It's not the end all be all. It's just the way that my twisted mind works in these
tools markets. In your toolbox, though. I don't mind putting more technicals tools in my toolbox. Talk to me about this.
All right.
Show screen.
S&P, there we go. So yeah, so here's the S&P. this is the daily. So I think it's all contingent around, it hinges on, we're operating around the 2022 highs, very obvious breakout, 48.20. From an Elliott wave point of view, you know, obviously I think the end of Q3 of 23 was wave 3. I'm really focused on this possible wave four pullback here. Do we get to the 22 highs? Do we not? And in what I was just mentioning, the B wave, I'm really, really on guard for a false break in the SPX 5140 to 5190. And that would be the scene of the crime in the B wave. You know, I've had some hedges on. I'm a little bit of cash, you know, but I'm just so focused on the zone here. And if we start to fail 5140, 5190, then you likely have the C wave. And then we got to go down and contend with, you know, that 2022 high. And I just can't help but think, does this correspond to 4.7 breaking on the 10-year yield? And again, if we get a lot of capitulation, a lot of bearishness, a lot of 5.0 headlines, like you just said, in the media, and we're still holding support in the S&P, that could be the buying opportunity. You know, it's going to
be an important question for you here. Like, I mean, everyone's looking at this area, like, and you got a daily chart up there. And I know you know, you're like, what do you like to give it? Like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days? I mean, what, you know, do you wait to that weekly candle next Friday? I mean, how do you, that's the toughest part. I mean, yeah, we're up at resistance. We're either going to bust out and go to new all-time highs, or we're going to fail up here. Like, how do you got the area. How do you quantify it?
It's just exactly that. I mean, we've got a 50 handle zone here in the S&P. I mean, if we get any kind of good news, we rally up and get a decent sized volume reversal inside of that zone. You know, you don't even have to wait to get out of the zone. You know, if we rally up, fail in a 5190, we start heading lower, and you've got pretty good, you know, growth trade, tech comms, communication leading on the downside. That's enough for me to say we're probably going to get that C wave spike lower. You know, but again, I'm thinking like, man, is tech really that bad? Yeah, we're getting a rotation out, but, you know, comms look good. You know, even Meta looks buyable here in the pullback after that rough quarter. You know, the rest of communications, Spotify, Netflix, Google, all look solid. I mean, I think that's a good little zone there. And that, so, you know, even Apple holding, Nvidia looks good on the 900. I'm confident to say I'm not sure what's going on here.
you it doesn't sound like you're ready for the sell.
Yeah,
you're not.
I've heard you more convicted. I've heard you more convicted before. I heard you like hands down. But that's what this market's about, right? Picking and choosing your spots and letting see. We've had a nice rally off that low, so. Great information, technical information, fundamental information coming from Todd Gordon. You guys all know him at Todd Gordon TA is the real person to follow on Twitter. He's the founder of Inside Edge Capital, tradinganalysis.com. Thanks for joining us this morning, Todd. We'll dial you up again real soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great week.
Thanks, Todd.
Hi, Todd. Take care. Going back to that Robinhood news real quick, just getting some more color on, I'm searching on Twitter right now. So it is that the SEC is looking into its crypto business. See this as, I mean, you know, we mentioned this, but we also have a class action lawsuit against Coinbase, not really moving the stock. I don't know how big of a deal this is, but basically like former customers are banding together and suing Coinbase for selling unregistered securities. Again, I don't think the market typically cares too much about these like class action lawsuits or how much weight this one has, but they seem kind of similar. Like both, you know, obviously Coinbase is all crypto, but Robinhood is getting looked in specifically for the crypto side of its business. You did have some analysts coming in and defending Coinbase after the report last week. You had Wedbush coming out, raising price target to 250, Oppenheimer raising price target to 282. So I don't know. I mean, Coinbase obviously had such a big quarter in Q1 from Bitcoin's big rally, but now that crypto has stalled out, I'd be kind of cautious buying Coinbase up here and maybe even potentially looking at some puts.
I would not. Yeah, I'm with you, AB. I would not buy Coinbase up here either. It's been an incredible run. The stock started October back in 70. You're talking about a stock that's up 200% in 6 months. And yes, crypto has had a fantastic run during that time. Bitcoin more than doubling too. We know Coinbase moves with Bitcoin. So that's the overall like leader is just Bitcoin, but it's been a big run. I mean, if you're coming in here buying Coinbase now, where were you when it was 60, 80, 100, 150, 200, 225? It feels like a chase here.
Yeah, and I was surprised to see so many analysts coming in and raising price targets because it's like, all right, the stock.
Well, they all chase. That's what they do. You know, they all chase. You know, it's the lemmings. This is like what they do. They chase.
All right, real quick. Oh, I'm sorry. Just real quick, that on that Robinhood, Dennis, you made a nice call there. And look at the area that it just came into. This 1640.
We need your charts, Joel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Real quick. I mean, if you're just trading blindly off the charts and you look at this hood, it's fallen. You're short. And you're like, oh man, 4 or 5 lows at the 1650 area. I'm taking the money and run. And there you go. You got a nice little pop on days like this. Let's see if we can get back to unchanged there at 1790. That was the closing price, but well off the pre-market low here in Robinhood.
All right, real quick before we get to our second special guest of the day, we did have some more news in analyst land. Micron get a little upgrade today from Baird. Baird raised its price target on Micron, ticker MU, from $115 to $150 a share. Micron trading up about $4 on the news, 3.5%. Did Micron already report this week?
It reports later. So it reported last quarter, and it always reports the last. It's almost last to report in the quarterly earnings. So they reported back in March. So they're always really late. So you're like literally 2 months away from the next Micron report. And had the gap and go.
And I mean, this is like, you know, if all you did this earnings cycle was play the expectations trade and, you know, buy stocks that had low bars and sell stocks that had high bars, you've done pretty well.
Yeah.
And Micron, I mean, anything in the chip space, I feel like is still in that zone where like you need to have a really strong report. And by strong report, I mean EPS beat, revenue beat, and, you know, give good guidance. So anything in the chip space right now, I'd be a little bit tentative ahead of the report. But obviously Micron, you know, has been doing well, been reporting some good numbers in the stock. Again, getting a bounce today. But you're now looking at pretty, you know, damn close to its all-time highs at $130 a share. So we'll see if we get up there, if we get back up to those all-time highs before the report.
Yeah, look, if you're buying this, just look for follow through, you know, off the open up 420. Your next daily high does not come in to 124.42. The settlement on that day was 121.77. There's a couple levels in Micron. So, okay, so we're going to go to our second guest of the day here. It's none other than my nephew, Hayden Buckfire. Let's bring Hayden on. Hayden, how you doing today?
Good. It's a pleasure to be on this Monday morning bonanza. Thank you for having me.
All right. So you are the first person that I know that personally went to the Berkshire meeting. How did you get, are you a shareholder? Is your dad a shareholder? How did you get to go to that meeting?
Yeah, my dad is a shareholder, and it's been a goal of his for a long time to go to the meeting. And I happened to tag along. I'm interested in the market and finance. And it was a great experience. The way you get in is if you're a shareholder, you go into this will call line. And anyone who's a shareholder can get, I think, up to 4 passes for the event. So it's 20,000 people there in the arena. It certainly was quite the show.
So what was the day? Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis. Did you want to throw something in there?
No. I was just gonna say, tell us about that experience. Like, I mean, it looked like an arena. It looked like a Taylor Swift concert. You know, I'm seeing pictures of it, and I'm like, it looks like just a packed arena. It's unbelievable for a shareholder meeting. I think I envision a lot of these shareholder meetings, nobody goes at all, but this one is the Taylor Swift really of the financial industry here. What was it like? Like, talk us about just the atmosphere. You know, talk about, you know, the people. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, of course. It was. It's quite the experience for the world to descend on the great city of Omaha and the great city of Nebraska. You have people we met from all over, from Spain. We met a couple of guys from the Netherlands, Amsterdam. I guess they work at a financial firm, and after 5 years at the firm, the firm rewards them by sending them out to Omaha for the meeting. So clearly shows the respect that they have, you know, all across the world. We met people from London, even met someone from Omaha who always wanted to join the party. And I think 20 years ago, he bought a share of Berkshire or some, a few shares to be able to go to the meeting, and it turned out to be pretty lucrative. And it's just, it is quite remarkable. This is not for a Taylor Swift concert. It's not for Bruce Springsteen or Jimi Hendrix coming back from the dead to shred guitar. It was for, you know, American Corporation. It just goes to show the level of respect that there is across the world.
What was the day like? Like, did you get there? Did you have to get there early to get a good seat? Just tell us about the day. What was it like?
Yeah, so given that there is such demand to get in and there's no assigned seats, it does start pretty early. We got there around 6 a.m. There's not really a whole lot else to do in Omaha, so we were content with doing that. And we waited in line for an hour, and then we waited in the arena for an hour. And then they had Q&A. There's this 93-year-old guy doing Q&A for 5 hours straight, which is quite cool. Which is not 5 hours straight, but 5 hours throughout the morning and afternoon, which is quite the achievement at that age.
Is Buffett up there for 5 hours answering questions for 5 hours straight?
Yeah, he is. And he has quite the propensity to thoroughly elucidate on questions. So he's definitely, you know, taking his time answering questions thoughtfully. And it's pretty impressive. And then around four was the actual meeting after the Q&A, the actual shareholders meeting. And many people leave for the actual meeting part. But there's certainly that lasts about an hour as well. And that was the day.
Did you have a Squishmallow?
Did I have a Squishmallow? I did not, but I saw a few. They looked pretty cool.
All right, let's just get to like his overall, like just your final takeaway from like his investment philosophy. He's just sitting on a ton of cash. I mean, you know, cash is paying, you know, right now. Did you get any like, you know, key takeaways, you know, from what, I mean, he's just got all that cash. You don't know what he's going to do with it. He's got more cash after he just, you know, sold some Apple here. I mean, do you think he's being maybe a little bit too conservative in his investment outlook?
Yeah, I think those were definitely the two big stories, were the cash pile that he has, and also selling Apple stock. I think it's certainly conservative, but I don't necessarily think it was a break from his philosophy, which I think has for a while been to have more successes than failures. And you must assume that, you know, having this large cash pile is going to be more advantage than getting into an investment he doesn't fully believe in. And clearly, I think a lot of shareholders find that pretty persuasive, you know, sticking around with the company over all these years and all of the gains in the company itself. I think it's pretty persuasive myself.
Did you go to the football stadium where University of Nebraska plays?
I did not. That's in Lincoln, which is about
Lincoln. That's right. Do you know why they have an N in the middle of their football field?
I think it's for Nebraska, if I had to guess.
No, it stands for knowledge.
Oh. Really?
Come on. Don't got to pick on. Don't pick on Nebraska.
No, I'm not. Okay. I just wanted
actually
to bring,
pretty funny, though.
I just wanted to bring on, that's my nephew Hayden Buckfire. He's going to be a sophomore at Michigan in the fall, right? He passed all your classes, right, Hayden? I don't want to have any breaking news, but I just wanted to come on and talk about that meeting, and he follows the markets real closely. So thanks a lot, Hayden. I'll be seeing you real soon. So thanks for coming on today.
Thank you,
Hayden. All right, that was a fun little special guest. Always good to get people who have boots on the ground experience at these types of events. Joel, we got to make it a goal to get out there sometime. I mean,
We should. You know, we'll do the Benzinga road trip here, going out to the meeting. It should happen here. 5 hours. He does 5 hours of Q&A. He's like 90. How old is he? 95?
Boy, I know, man. Boy, he's
how old
up
is
there.
Buffett? Okay. Hey, Siri. Siri never asked him. How old is Warren Buffett?
Probably 95 is a good guess. 93.
Before we wrap things up about the guest tomorrow, I thought Aaron was going to mention when Todd came on, but he decided to bet on the Derby and not tell us about it, Dennis. That's what he did. Yeah. Yep. He didn't tell us about it. I did.
I did.
Well, AB did. Did you get the winner again? AB is hot right now.
I got better than the winner. I got an exacta. I got the number one and two horse correct.
Holy Willis, Joel, you're fired from the horse.
Why didn't you mention that when you were on the show?
Well, okay, so because first of all, on the show, I mentioned two horses that I like. Neither were right. The Sierra Leone was obviously the second in the exact, and it was Mystic Dan first. I started doing some more research. I heard, one of my friends was telling me, "Oh, Mystic Dan's supposed to be good in the mud, this and that," and I was like,
"I did get some rain." The mudder, His mudder was a mudder.
His father was a mudder, and I. I deposited into this Twin Spires account for the first time, and I threw like $50 on three different horses, and I had some left over, and I was like, okay, sure, let's get a little exotic with it. Went with an exacta, and I just got lucky. I mean, I picked Mystic Dan to win, and then I was like, well, Sierra Leone's one of the favorites, so it has better, you know, and we talked about Sierra Leone, Joel, that was from you, so I was, has a better chance of, or as a decent, as anyone, chance of finishing second. I just don't know. Like, how do you know what's going on during the race? Because I had no clue what was going on.
You know what? You know, and that's the thing. I wish horse racing was like the markets, that like you could change your mind like that quickly.
Halfway through the race?
Not even halfway through the race. I mean, I'm talking to Lisa, and I'm like, man, but the theme of my article was no horse has ever won from the 17 hole, and right. So I'm talking, and she goes, well, before the race, she goes, well, why did you bet on a horse in the 17 hole if the horse is number one from there? That's not, probabilities. And then I'm like, okay, whatever. We'll see what happens. And the horse broke. And instead of going inside, the horse right next to him pushed him outside. So he even had farther the run.
I think technically Fierceness wasn't even running in the 17 hole. I think it was actually
16.
Was 16 because there was a scratch, but it was still wearing the number 17.
Right.
But yeah, and then so not only did I not really know what was going on in the race, and then it ended, and then I was like, oh, wait, hold, 3-2. I think I had that in an exacta. And then I went to go look at my Twin Spires account.
It was jammed.
Nothing was loading. So then I was like, wait, did I not have that? So I had no clue. And then, the way that these, with horse racing, it's different than other sports gambling where you don't really know your payout until like after. So I had no clue how much I was set to win. And one of my friends was like, oh, that, $25 on the exacta, that could be like $1,000. Ends up coming in at $3,000. So $25 to win $3,000.
You made $3,000 on that?
Yeah, ended up being a pretty
good
day.
Holy crap, dinner's on AB this weekend.
Yeah.
I invited him, and he's going to California for his little brother's graduation. I heard that
$25 makes $3,000. Oh, we needed these picks, AB.
I know.
$100 on it.
That's the first thing I said. I said you should have did the article. Then I'm thinking, did he mention these horses at all? I'm like,
no.
It'd be nice to know 10 minutes before the race started instead of 10 minutes after. But I heard the guy lost a shoe. The jockey that he scooted in through the rail. I mean, it was like it was bumping. I mean, and I guess his shoe hit, but then he said afterwards, he goes, I guess I can afford a new pair of shoes now after winning the Kentucky Derby.
Wow.
That's good. That's some good jockey. Well, I mean, that's a little bit lighter now. You lose the edge.
Kick
that's
your shoes edge. Off. And you're moving two less pounds.
And it was by this much. So, I mean, that maybe played a difference. But I threw like a bunch of random. I had like 20 bets total on there. So I was like, if one of these doesn't hit, then I'm a terrible horse.
He bet $2,000 worth of bets.
No.
Risk reward. Risk. Won. I knew Dennis was going to say that.
No, it's all about on every single horse. My horse came in. Here's the ticket. I bet on every single one.
I had some like $5 trifectas and stuff, which I did have a trifecta that had 2-3, and then I think it was like Just a Touch was the third horse, which it didn't. That didn't pan out. But I mean, the only problem now is, Joel, is my Twin Spires won't let me withdraw my money yet. It's saying like my initial deposit has to clear first and all this. So I just have to stay off the app so I don't bet any of the winnings away. before I'm able to withdraw. But if you have any races coming up this week, you know, I don't know what's running right now, but maybe we can.
And they're making 5% on your money. That's why they're not giving you your money.
God. Yeah, they're making
5% on your couple G butt. All right, we went
value your money. They stole that crap now on you.
Yep. All right. Who do we have coming up tomorrow, Joel?
Holy, I know 10. What's going on here.
Man,
OT.
We got live trading.
T3 Tuesday tomorrow. Make sure to tune in. That'll be a wrap on pre-market prep this morning, going a little bit over. We will see you guys tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.